Uncle Tom's Cabin stands as perhaps the most politically influential novel in American history. When Abraham Lincoln met Harriet Beecher Stowe in 1862, he reportedly greeted her with the famous words, "So you're the little woman who wrote the book that started this great war." Whether apocryphal or not, this anecdote captures the extraordinary impact of a work that sold an unprecedented 300,000 copies in its first year alone. Beyond mere sales figures, the novel penetrated American consciousness through countless theatrical adaptations, songs, games, and merchandise. In Britain, Stowe received a hero's welcome, meeting literary figures like Charles Dickens and collecting signatures from 563,000 women on an anti-slavery petition. The novel's moral framing of slavery helped maintain British neutrality during the Civil War, despite economic pressures to support the cotton-producing South. What makes this achievement all the more remarkable is that Stowe was a woman, writing in an era when female authors were often dismissed, yet she managed to transform the national conversation about America's most divisive institution. Stowe gave several accounts of what inspired her to write Uncle Tom's Cabin, but the most consistent involved the 1850 Fugitive Slave Law. This controversial legislation required Northern citizens to assist in capturing escaped slaves, effectively extending slavery's reach into free states. When Stowe's sister Isabella urged her to use her writing talents against slavery, Stowe reportedly declared, "I will write something. I will if I live." Personal tragedy also fueled her creative fire. In 1849, Stowe lost her 18-month-old son Charlie to cholera. This devastating experience gave her insight into the anguish enslaved mothers felt when their children were sold away. Though the comparison between a child dying surrounded by family and a child being sold into slavery might seem imperfect, what matters is Stowe's recognition that motherhood created a bond of understanding that transcended racial differences. The novel emerged from Stowe's complex position on race and slavery. Though she opposed slavery, she was influenced by 19th-century racialism, the belief that different races possessed inherent, distinctive qualities. Unlike modern racism, racialism didn't explicitly rank races, but assigned each a unique genius and purpose. Stowe believed in universal human qualities that transcended race, while simultaneously attributing certain traits to racial characteristics. This tension produced a novel that was both conservative in its racial assumptions and radical in recognizing their inconsistencies. What made Uncle Tom's Cabin revolutionary was Stowe's masterful use of analogy. Throughout the novel, she challenges readers to imagine themselves in the slave's position. If it were your hairy mother, how fast could you walk? By repeatedly drawing connections between white and black experiences, particularly through shared motherhood, Stowe made slavery's horrors immediate and personal for her white audience. The novel opens on the Shelby Plantation in Kentucky, where economic hardship forces Mr. Shelby to sell two slaves to Trader Haley, Uncle Tom, a deeply religious and loyal slave, and young Harry, the son of Mrs. Shelby's maid, Eliza. When Eliza overhears this plan, she flees with her child across the ice-choked Ohio River in one of literature's most dramatic escapes. Tom, however, chooses to remain, accepting his fate rather than causing trouble for the Shelby family. Tom's journey takes him aboard a Mississippi steamboat where he meets Eva St. Clair, an angelic child who persuades her father, Augustine, to purchase Tom after he saves her from drowning. In the St. Clair household, Tom finds relative comfort, serving a kind, if philosophically conflicted, master. Augustine St. Clair recognizes slavery's moral bankruptcy, but lacks the resolve to free his own slaves. His cousin, Miss Ophelia, a New England spinster, represents Northern hypocrisy, theoretically opposing slavery while harboring racial prejudice. The St. Clair household presents a microcosm of Southern society. Augustine's wife, Marie, embodies the self-absorbed plantation mistress who sees slaves merely as conveniences for her comfort. Their daughter, Eva, represents pure Christian love, treating all people with equal kindness regardless of status. When Eva falls ill and dies, her deathbed plea for her father to free his slaves nearly transforms St. Clair, but his own sudden death leaves his promises unfulfilled. Tom is subsequently sold to Simon Legree, a brutal plantation owner who represents slavery at its most depraved. On Legree's plantation, Tom encounters Cassie, a once refined woman broken by slavery's cruelties, including the loss of her children. Despite Legree's attempts to crush Tom's spirit through beatings and degradation, Tom maintains his faith and continues ministering to his fellow slaves. When Tom helps Cassie and young Emmeline escape, Legree beats him to death, but not before Tom's unwavering forgiveness converts even the cruel overseers who administer his final beating. Parallel to Tom's story runs the escape narrative of Eliza, her husband George Harris, and their son Harry, whose harrowing flight north represents the Underground Railroad's dangerous reality. Their journey illuminates the complex network of secret routes and safe houses that helped thousands of enslaved people reach freedom, while slave catchers pursued them relentlessly. The novel portrays this journey with remarkable detail, from hidden chambers beneath floorboards to false-bottom wagons, from lanterns placed in windows as signals to the careful use of coded language, where packages meant fugitives and conductors were guides. The Harris family encounters numerous helpers along their perilous path, most notably the Quaker communities, whom Stowe portrays as principled abolitionists. These religious dissenters operated safe houses at great personal risk, facing potential fines, imprisonment, or violence for defying the Fugitive Slave Law of 1850. The novel details their methods, maintaining hidden rooms, providing disguises, and coordinating with other stations along the route. One Quaker woman even dresses Eliza as a wealthy white lady and her son as a girl to aid their escape. When slave hunters finally corner the fugitives in a dramatic confrontation, George Harris delivers a passionate defense of his right to freedom that resonates with revolutionary ideals. His declaration, "We don't own your laws. We don't own your country. We stand here as free under God's sky as you are. And by the great God that made us, we'll fight for our liberty till we die," echoes both American revolutionary rhetoric and contemporary European liberation movements. Stowe deliberately draws parallels between George Harris's resistance and European revolutionary movements, particularly the Hungarian Revolution of 1848. She challenges her readers with pointed questions. Why did Americans celebrate Hungarian freedom fighters like Lajos Kossuth while condemning enslaved people who sought the same liberty? This comparison exposed the fundamental hypocrisy of a nation that prided itself on democratic values while maintaining a system of human bondage. The Harris family's journey culminates in their arrival in Canada, where they experience the transformative moment of crossing into true freedom. Stowe vividly describes their emotional response to reaching British soil, where slavery was illegal and they could finally live as a family without fear. The novel later reveals their eventual emigration to Liberia, where George envisions building a Christian African nation that might serve as a beacon of hope and advocacy for enslaved people worldwide. This colonizationist ending reflects one prominent anti-slavery position of Stowe's era, championed by organizations like the American Colonization Society. Though modern readers recognize its problematic assumptions about race, nationality, and the complexities of African-American identity, the vision of Liberia as a solution to American slavery overlooked both the challenges faced by settlers and the fundamental right of African-Americans to full citizenship in their native land. At its heart, Uncle Tom's Cabin is a deeply religious novel that frames slavery as fundamentally incompatible with Christianity. Tom emerges as a Christ figure whose suffering and death redeems others. Initially, Tom merely resembles Christ through his self-sacrifice, but by the novel's end, the metaphorical similarity becomes allegorical identity. Tom experiences Christ's presence, repeats Christ's final actions, prays for his tormentor's forgiveness, and, through death, redeems the criminals beside him. Stowe was the first American writer to imagine a slave as Christ, a radical theological move that challenged white supremacist Christianity. Through Tom, she argues that true Christianity transcends race and that enslaved believers might possess greater spiritual authenticity than their supposedly Christian masters. The novel repeatedly contrasts genuine Christianity with its hypocritical counterpart. When Senator Byrd votes for the fugitive slave law, but then helps an escaped mother and child, Stowe illustrates how abstract political principles collapse when confronted with human suffering. Similarly, St. Clair intellectually criticizes slavery, but lacks the moral courage to free his own slaves until Eva's death forces him to confront his complicity. Perhaps the most powerful spiritual transformation occurs in Miss Ophelia, whose theoretical abolitionism is tested when St. Clair gives her Topsy, a severely traumatized enslaved child. Initially repulsed by physical contact with Topsy, Miss Ophelia gradually overcomes her prejudice through Eva's example of unconditional love. When Eva tells the disbelieving Topsy, "I love you because you haven't had any father or mother or friends," she breaks through the child's hardened exterior, demonstrating that love can heal even the deepest wounds inflicted by slavery. Stowe doesn't contest the 19th century division between masculine public and feminine domestic spheres. She celebrates it. Yet she redefines these spheres in revolutionary ways. When Senator Byrd's wife protests the fugitive slave law he's just voted for, she transforms a political question into a moral one. Though Mrs. Byrd remains discreet in her silence, she watches as her husband's legislative authority is enfolded within the moral authority of the home she superintends. This scene mirrors Stowe's own relationship to gender expectations. Like Mrs. Byrd, she doesn't dispute that the public sphere is masculine, but redefines public questions as domestic ones. During her British lecture tour, Stowe sat quietly while men spoke her words, not from meek submission, but as a strategic transformation of gender constraints into power. Her silence confirmed her words came from a properly reticent woman, giving them greater authority. Throughout the novel, women emerge as moral compass points. Mrs. Shelby recognizes the evil of selling Tom and little Harry when her husband sees only financial necessity. Rachel Halliday, the Quaker matriarch, creates a household of perfect harmony that stands as a counterpoint to slavery's discord. Even Marie St. Clair, selfish and petulant, recognizes that separating families is slavery's greatest cruelty, though she lacks the moral courage to oppose it. Most powerfully, the novel suggests that motherhood creates a universal bond that transcends race and class. When Eliza risks her life crossing the ice floes with her child, Stowe directly challenges her readers. "If it were your Harry, mother, how fast could you walk?" By naming multiple children Harry throughout the novel, Stowe underscores that all mothers share the same fierce love, regardless of race. Stowe's novel goes beyond documenting slavery's physical brutalities to explore its profound psychological damage to both enslaved and enslavers. Through characters like Cassie, Stowe shows how slavery systematically destroys human dignity and hope. Once educated and refined, Cassie has been so traumatized by repeated sexual exploitation and the loss of her children that she has become hardened, even killing her own infant rather than allowing it to grow up enslaved. The novel also examines how slavery corrupts white character. Young Henrique, Augustine's nephew, beats his slave boy Godo despite having a naturally generous nature. When Eva challenges this behavior, Henrique promises to be kinder, but the system itself encourages cruelty. More dramatically, Simon Legree's sadism stems partly from his rejection of his pious mother's love, a psychological wound he inflicts on others through his brutality. Even well-intentioned white characters suffer moral damage from slavery's influence. Augustine St. Clair, intelligent and humane, recognizes slavery's evil but lacks the moral courage to act on his convictions. His philosophical debates with his cousin Miss Ophelia expose the hypocrisy of both North and South. She theoretically opposes slavery while harboring racial prejudice, while he intellectually condemns it while continuing to benefit from it. Perhaps most psychologically insightful is Stowe's portrayal of Topsy, a child so traumatized she claims she never was born and just growed. Denied any knowledge of her origins or family, Topsy has internalized the dehumanization inflicted upon her, believing herself incapable of being loved. Only through Eva's unconditional acceptance does Topsy begin to develop a sense of self-worth. Stowe's novel exposes slavery's economic underpinnings with remarkable clarity and complexity, revealing how the institution's financial mechanisms corrupted both individuals and society at large. Through Mr. Shelby's financial troubles, she shows how even relatively humane slave owners might sell human beings to satisfy creditors, demonstrating how economic pressures could override moral considerations. The character of Haley, the slave trader, represents capitalism at its most callous, viewing humans purely as commodities with market values based on age, health, and appearance. His detailed pricing calculations and casual discussions of human stock illuminate the cold mathematics of the slave trade. The novel meticulously documents the various economic roles within the slave system: the traders who moved human cargo between markets, the auctioneers who conducted sales with disturbing cheerfulness, and the plantation owners who treated slaves as living capital. Through characters like Tom Loker and Marks, Stowe reveals the network of professional slave catchers who made their living hunting escaped slaves, adding another layer to slavery's economic ecosystem. St. Clair offers the novel's most pointed critique of slavery's economic foundation when he tells Miss Ophelia, "The slave owner can whip his refractory slave to death. The capitalist can starve him to death." While acknowledging Northern capitalism's exploitation of workers, St. Clair nevertheless recognizes slavery as the more bold and palpable infringement of human rights, involving speculators, breeders, traders, and brokers in human bodies and souls. His own plantation serves as a microcosm of slavery's economic inefficiencies, where slaves are often treated as status symbols rather than productive assets. Simon Legree embodies slavery's most brutal economic logic, representing the system's ultimate degradation of human life into pure commodity. He explicitly states his philosophy of working slaves to death rather than providing adequate care, finding it cheaper to replace them than maintain them. This chilling calculus exposes the fundamental incompatibility between human dignity and a system that treats people as disposable property. Legree's plantation demonstrates how the drive for profit could transform slavery from a paternalistic institution into an industrial killing machine. The novel also highlights how slavery's economic tentacles reached far beyond the South, implicating the entire nation in its moral corruption. When Susan and Emmeline are sold to satisfy debts owed to B & Co. of New York, Christian men who felt uneasy about trading in souls but couldn't sacrifice $30,000 for principle, Stowe reveals the hypocrisy of Northern financial institutions. Through detailed descriptions of shipping manifests, insurance policies, and banking transactions, she shows how Wall Street and other Northern financial centers profited and sustained the slave economy while maintaining a facade of moral superiority. Stowe's economic critique extends to the impact of slavery on free labor, showing how the institution depressed wages and opportunities for poor whites while concentrating wealth in the hands of plantation owners. Through characters like George Harris, she demonstrates how slavery stunted economic development by suppressing innovation and entrepreneurship among both enslaved and free populations. Uncle Tom's Cabin's initial reception combined extraordinary popularity with critical respect. Within a generation, however, its literary status plummeted. By the turn of the century, though still widely read, the literary establishment had thoroughly repudiated it. Henry James dismissed it as much less a book than a state of feeling, and its reputation declined further in the 20th century. The novel's cultural legacy became particularly complicated as Tom shows, theatrical adaptations that transformed Stowe's heroic, principled Tom into a shuffling, servile stereotype distorted its message. These minstrel-influenced productions, which drew 1.5 million viewers annually at their peak, added elements like bloodhounds to Eliza's escape and transformed Tom from a vigorous, capable man into a weak, feeble-minded old man. Eventually, Uncle Tom became a racial slur denoting excessive subservience to white authority, a profound misrepresentation of Stowe's character, who dies rather than betray his fellow slaves. Critics like J.C. Furness blamed Stowe for perpetuating racism, claiming Americans still see Negroes and their plight all too consistently through Mrs. Stowe's always flawed and long obsolete spectacles. This prompted numerous African-American writers to rewrite Uncle Tom's Cabin, from Richard Wright's Uncle Tom's Children to Toni Morrison's Beloved. The novel was further dismissed for its sentimentality, excluded from literary anthologies and classes until the late 1980s. Critics like Hugh Kenner derided it as Mrs. Stowe's famous 11 Kleenex tract, while James Baldwin defined sentimentalism as the ostentatious parading of excessive and spurious emotion that represented dishonesty, the inability to feel. The rehabilitation of sentimentality, and consequently Uncle Tom's Cabin, came through Philip Fisher's Hard Facts and Jane Tompkins's Sensational Designs, both 1985. Fisher argued that sentimentality had a distinguished philosophical history as the primary mode of radical politics, extending normal states of primary feeling to people from whom they have previously been withheld. Tompkins suggested that Stowe's focus on individual moral transformation wasn't politically naive, but fundamentally necessary. What makes Uncle Tom's Cabin endure beyond its historical moment is Stowe's remarkable ability to create empathy across seemingly unbridgeable divides. Through vivid characterization and emotional scenarios, she forces readers to see slavery not as an abstract political question, but as a human tragedy affecting individuals with hopes, fears, and loves just like their own. The novel's power stems from its insistence that moral understanding requires imaginative identification with others' suffering. When Stowe directly asks readers to imagine themselves in Eliza's position, fleeing across ice floes with a child in arms, she creates an empathetic bridge across racial lines. Similarly, when she portrays Tom's spiritual struggles, she reveals the rich inner life of a man society treated as mere property. This empathetic imagination extends beyond the enslaved to include complex white characters. Augustine St. Clair's philosophical cynicism masks deep wounds from a lost love and disillusionment with his society's hypocrisy. Even Simon Legree, the novel's villain, receives psychological complexity through glimpses of his rejection of his mother's love, a wound that festers into cruelty toward others. Stowe's achievement lies in making slavery's abstract evil concrete through individual stories. Statistics about slavery might inform the mind, but Tom's steadfast faith, Eliza's desperate river crossing, and little Eva's deathbed pleas move the heart. By engaging readers' emotions rather than merely their intellects, Stowe created a work that transcended political argument to become a moral awakening. In her concluding remarks, Stowe challenges her readers not just to feel, but to act. She asks whether every American Christian owes to the African race some effort at reparation for the wrongs that the American nation has brought upon them. This question, about national responsibility for historical injustice, remains profoundly relevant today, ensuring that Uncle Tom's Cabin continues to speak to contemporary concerns about race, justice, and human dignity. Uncle Tom's Cabin ends with a powerful call to action that still resonates. Nations harboring great and unredressed injustice contain the seeds of their own destruction. Stowe reminds her Christian readers that the coming kingdom of Christ is associated with the day of vengeance against oppressors, quoting scripture that God shall break in pieces the oppressor. This prophetic warning proved tragically accurate as America descended into civil war less than a decade after the novel's publication. Yet the deeper moral challenge of Stowe's work, to recognize the full humanity of all people regardless of race, remains unfinished business in American society. The novel's most radical aspect may be its insistence that true Christianity demands active opposition to injustice rather than comfortable accommodation with existing social systems. When Tom refuses to whip another slave despite knowing it will cost him his life, he embodies moral courage that transcends his era's racial hierarchies. Similarly, when Senator Byrd helps fugitive slaves despite having voted for the fugitive slave law, he demonstrates how abstract political positions crumble when confronted with human suffering. Perhaps the most enduring lesson of Uncle Tom's Cabin is that social change requires both political action and personal transformation. Stowe understood that slavery wouldn't end through legislation alone, but through a fundamental shift in how Americans perceived their moral obligations to one another. By creating characters whose humanity was impossible to deny, she challenged readers to expand their circle of moral concern beyond the boundaries of race and class. The novel's final image of George Shelby freeing all his slaves in Tom's memory offers a vision of what genuine reconciliation might look like: acknowledgement of past wrongs, concrete action to address injustice, and commitment to a more equitable future. That this vision remains partially unfulfilled nearly two centuries later speaks not to the novel's failure, but to the ongoing relevance of its moral challenge to American society.